The Waini writers acknowledge and pay our respects to the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians whose ancestral lands we gather on. We acknowledge the deep feelings of attachment and relationship of the Kaurna people to country and extend this acknowledgement to Torres Strait Islander and all First Nations people. We respect and value their past, present and ongoing connection to the land and cultural beliefs.
This podcast episode includes content that is not suitable for ages 16 and under, such as swearing and sexual content. Welcome back to episode 6 of the Waini Writers. I'm here today with Abby Guy.
Yeah, Abby Guy.
Abby Guy. And I'm Harry Stewart. Now, today the Waini Writers are pleased to have a guest this week. Woohoo.
Hello. Woo!
Our guest today writes under 5 different pen names, such as Ruby Elizabeth, Scarlett Knox, Pippa Langhorne, EJ Knox, and Elizabeth Stevens, writing her own independently published novels that span across a range of genres, from fantasy to romance and even a touch of paranormal at times. She's in the second year of her PhD in creative writing, researching young adult feminist reimaginings of Irish mythology. She's endlessly busy, writes from sunup to sundown, and I can say confidently inspires Abby and I tremendously. So today, here to talk about her indie publishing career, her life as a writer, balancing family, academia, and a full-time career, allow me to introduce our first guest of the Waini Writers podcast today, Izzy Duffield.
Hello.
Hi,
Thanks
Izzy.
Thanks for having me.
How are
Welcome.
You? Welcome.
Well, not nearly caffeinated enough, but that's okay.
Yeah.
24 hours in the day.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here as our first guest, honestly. Harry and I were talking about who to get in, and you were like the first name, I think, that we pulled.
Really? Whereas yeah. I was sitting there in the meeting going, do you want me? Hello, hello.
Yeah.
It just made sense. Like every time we catch up for coffee and we sit in that laneway at uni, we just chat shit for a while, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
About a lot of weird stuff.
Oh, a lot of weird
stuff. A lot.
It's probably good those conversations aren't recorded.
No, I think it's good that they are recorded. That's why you're here today.
It's true. Yeah, that's
so that we can put you on the stand and everything you say, you can now be held accountable for.
That's bad news, but okay.
Brilliant. Lovely.
So obviously you're an indie published author,
Yarp.
Right? Am I correct in saying that you've got your own publishing company as well?
I do, yes. So it's the parent company of Sleeping Dragon Books. And then I have a few imprints that I publish under. So like the more adult stuff, kind of new adult stuff is all under Kinky Siren.
Yep.
And then I have a few others that I haven't trotted out yet for things like eventually when I start actually like splitting the company up properly, there'll be my Pithy Pooka for YA. And
Pithy
then
Pooka?
Pithy Pooka. Well, Pithy Pooka is the short stories I'm writing at the moment. So it's Pooka Press.
Oh,
for
cute.
The YA stuff. And then there's like Sweet Pixie for children's. And
how do you come up with these names?
Well, for some reason it was all Irish inspired, so I kind of just, when I started out with Sleeping Dragon, I went, oh, mythological creatures, and then
yeah.
looked up
it's
a bunch
my
of other ones,
favorite.
And then, yeah. So it came from Isabel Carmody's Ober Newton Chronicles, because there was the character in it that she fell asleep, and then there was, like, they called her dragon and stuff, and so it was kind of unleashing your potential.
Oh.
When she woke up, sort of, yeah, so.
That's such a nice meaning.
Yeah, so it was that whole kind of my website is a bit dodgy. I haven't done anything with it for years, but it's like Sleeping Dragon Books, Unleash Your Potential.
Oh my God, I had no idea. Like I knew that it was, I knew it was Sleeping Dragon, but like yeah. I or instantly think like Smaug from The Hobbit.
I mean, like you can't not really think of it, unfortunately. But no, it's got meaning behind it. But
it's cute.
Yeah.
My God.
So what are all these separate companies, like what's your goal for them?
So eventually one day I'd like to publish other people.
Okay.
And be a proper big company. I'd like to have my bookstore, and I'd like one of those like fandangled little printing presses that, you know, like Hayes used to have the chocolate
factory
bit behind the glass. So
yeah.
I want like a printing press set up to like churn out books while people can wander around the cafe and buy books. And that's the dream.
Oh my God, that's so cute though. I love that idea.
So
yeah
that'd be nice. I mean, like, it probably won't be publishing like a printing most stuff that gets put on the shelves. It'll just be for show. Or, you know, like if I ever get into like working out how to do fancy hardcover bindings and stuff, then I could just print out those for to get those done. But yeah, so that's the overall
goal. That's the dream.
But you know, laziness gets in the way.
Yeah.
Doesn't it ever?
Yeah.
We only talked about motivation in one of our other episodes. And we're like, sometimes we want to write full books in a day. Other times we never want to pick up a pen.
Yeah, it's like, true though. Like, why cannot this, like, why can't this idea already be out of my head already?
Yeah, already done. Yeah. Why doesn't things just, words just seamlessly flow onto my page? Yeah.
That'd be nice.
So how long have you been indie publishing for?
So my first title came out in April 2017. So my company was registered January that year.
Wow.
So.
So what, we're talking six years?
Six and a half years.
Holy shit, it's a long time. Yeah. And how many published books have you got?
66.
66. Holy shit.
66 and six and a half years.
Oh my God. And this is the other one. I know the answer to this, but I just want the listeners to be impressed.
Yep.
And how many books have you released and have got to release this year?
So this year it's every 6 weeks, which is, my math skills are terrible. I don't know, what's that, 10? No, because I think there was a double release in there a couple
I
of
also
times,
have so. No math skills. Yeah. We've established on this pod that we're not STEM girlies. Yeah, we're not also STEM not girlies. Math girlies. Yeah, so no. Yeah.
No, I'm a words person.
This is a
that's, I don't know, say 11 or 12, and then next year it'll be monthly. So
monthly?
Yeah.
What's the 6 weekly like push at the moment? Is it intense?
Six
weeks is a short time to write a book.
Is it?
Yeah.
It is, yeah. You ask any like trad publishing person.
Well, yeah, that's
true. I think
true.
6 weeks is quite a push.
For indies, at least, I'm finding out that we tend to write faster, or at least in the romance sphere, anyway. So for that 6 weeks, I'll dick around for about 4 weeks and then write for 2 weeks, basically. Or I'll write, you know, 3 different books in the 4 weeks and then. The one I'm supposed to be.
And then write the one you're supposed to write.
Yeah.
Because we've also spoken on the pod in one of our later episodes about how both of us work as writers. And I'm a very organic writer.
Yeah.
So I write and delete, and work out everything on the page.
That stresses me out. When you were like, I deleted 15,000 words, I was like, A
physical like revulsion to that.
Yeah. I was like, I think that my insides just crumbled on your bar.
Oh, don't worry. I like cry as well when I do it. It's fucking horrible. Yeah. I hate my process. I think it's the most inefficient thing in the world. But I keep doing it.
Yeah. Whereas my process is very planned. Is that... How do you approach writing?
These days it's more planned.
Yeah.
So when I was starting.
By necessity.
By necessity. So, yeah, I used to kind of just write by the seat of my pants. I would just sit down and just write for, like, so No More Maybes. That was a 2-week effort of just sit down, write it, and it came out.
Wow.
And so that didn't work when I started getting more ideas. So it worked at the time because that was the only idea really I had. But now, I think it's for every book I finish, I probably started at least 5 more.
Whoa.
So it's quite inconvenient.
What do you mean by starting though?
Well,
are you getting
like, I put the ideas down, I've got scenes that I've written up.
Does that mean, like, you know, you said that every next year, every month is a book.
Yeah.
Does that mean you've planned every book for every month? So you've already kind of banked up what's going
on. Yeah, and you can put pre-orders up for 12 months in advance. So they're all up for pre-order till, what are we in now? October, September-ish, I think, the last one's up for pre-order.
Wow.
So.
Oh, my God.
And then if I won't finish that.
Yeah, but then, like, if you decide you've got another book and you're like, I really want that written as well, do you just kind of slot it in there somehow? Or?
No, then I'll just write it and
put it up the next
year. Yeah, that'll be the next one that goes on there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in the cycle. Because at the moment I'm stuck with a lot of series, so I want the next book to be available for pre-order when the first one comes out. Like flow-throughs and like buy-throughs and stuff. So a lot of it is a marketing decision as well as I just know I'm not going to write it if I don't have a deadline. It's not going to happen. I'll just keep starting.
Like you said, you fluff around for four weeks and that final 2 weeks. Yeah, because you got the deadline there.
Like I've tried numerous times over the years. Like 2020 was a terrible year for me because I went, no, I'm not putting anything up for pre-order till I finished it.
Yeah.
So like nothing came out.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So it's a process I have to do.
So because you say you fluff around for 4 weeks and write for two, is that why you've changed it to 4 weeks for next year? Because you're like, I think I can fluff for two now.
Partly, but also because I have too many ideas. Like I've started too many series that need continuation. So it's literally like, okay, well, if I'm going to bring out the next books in this series, then it's going to have to be this often, really.
Wow. Mm.
And part of it is an income thing too. The more books I release, the more money I make.
More money you make, yeah.
So, it's my main source of income. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, now, look, I gave you a little bit of a plug in the introduction
yes.
about all the stuff that you're doing. But do you want to tell our listeners one where they can find your books and give a plug to your latest book.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes. Well, the next one is very, very exciting. So that's Prince of Thorns. It comes out in 2 weeks, so the 31st.
Beautiful book cover, by the way.
It's so beautiful. Oh, it is gorgeous. Harry and I found it, like, I don't know, 6 months ago now, and we were like, when's this one coming out? Because it's beautiful.
It is. The thing that annoys me most is I think I've got the most compliments on it, and it's the only one of my covers I have made.
It does feel a little, you're like, what about my other covers?
You're like, guys.
I'm like, but I did so much, like, Photoshop work to try and learn how to do this one.
Yeah, and no discredit to your covers, by the way. They're very good.
It's fine, but no, it is. It's a really, really beautiful cover. And it's very exciting. It's had a lot of unexpected things come out of it, but it's another one of my darker bully, new adult, young adult kind of crossovery things. Wow. Very exciting. It's sort of, I've fan fictioned my own work a bit in it, because one of my more popular books is Accidentally Perfect, and there's a kind of enemies to lovers sort of love triangle thing going on, and everyone really seems to like Roman's character a lot. So I kind of went, well, what if I take that character but then make him a bit more kind of, not older age-wise, but older in terms of like more mature, and instead of ass farting around and being all like, no, I'm not good enough for you, he's like, no, actually, I want you and I'm going to have you. And let's do this thing. Yeah. And so there's a forbidden love sort of thing where he's the heir to the the club leader, and she's his daughter, but then he wants, the leader wants her to have a better life and get out of that world and stuff. So she's completely off limits to the point that dad has killed people for hypothetically asking her on dates.
We like a bit of murder.
Yeah, so them being together literally could kill him.
I like that I'm like, oh shit, and Abby's like, I love a bit of murder.
Yeah. Well, we all know Abby loves murder. Yeah. Let's be honest.
I love that that's common knowledge.
So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun because, and it's very like insta-love, basically. I love to hate you kind of start off. We both have very, very dishonourable intentions in this, going into this.
But we're open about it.
Yeah. But then, oops, hang on, actually, we're completely in love with each other and now we have to make sure you don't die. So the tagline is something like, you know, being with her will kill him, but she's all he wants. So, yeah, I've had a lot of fun writing it. Horrendously swoony. It sounds really, really arrogant to say that about my own book, but I'm sitting there going, oh my god.
It's like you write a line, you're like, beautiful. What a guy.
He just pops out and I'm just like, oh my god.
Like you didn't write it.
Look, if you're not writing characters that you also swoon for, then what's the point?
Exactly. I mean that's the thing. Readers can tell when you're enjoying what you're writing and when you're affected by what you're writing.
Especially if they're hot men.
Yes.
Like, look.
Yeah, look, yeah. Vaughn is, very, very, very nice.
He's a good one.
He's a swoony man.
He's a keeper.
I mean, he's not good because he's, a bit murderous and whatnot. But other than that.
Comes out, when does it come out?
October 31.
October 31, yeah, wow. Yeah. It's a shame that's not going to be released in time for me to put Vaughn, is his name?
Vaughn.
On my list of, fictional characters I'd do the dirty with. Because he sounds like he's a winner.
Episode, you couldn't have the advanced reader copy.
And do the dirty with Vaughn, Watch him appear in next week's episode.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, so that author that we had last week, she wrote someone
I want to do the dirty
that
with
I want to do the dirty with. Yeah.
Hopefully, fingers crossed, it's kind of what you hope for in life, that people want to do the dirty with you, with your boys.
If I write a romance character, I want people to want to fuck him.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's what you want. You do want readers to be like, yeah, I'd fuck him.
Yeah. I'd fuck him,
And no, but also you want them to tell other people that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the big...
Yeah, you want his fuckability to be his selling point.
And to be out there. Because there's no point people often... Like, I love when readers email me or leave comments on posts and stuff and be like, oh, I love this character, I love this book and all that stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but have you told other people?
I know, I wrote the fucking
thing. Where's your book talk, video? I'm like,
put it up.
Go and tell people.
How about you market for me and market well?
I'm like, where are all these people book talking my stuff? Like, hello. And I'm like, I'm too lazy to do it myself. That's the answer, isn't it?
Is that sort of what you rely on, Mike? I know you do a lot more marketing than what you're but is that kind of what you hope for with book marketing? Is
definitely.
That if readers are just gonna word of mouth?
Definitely. Yeah. Like it's the definite hope that I don't want to necessarily I don't have to be one of those like BookTok sensations and stuff, because that's getting a bit old hat when people are putting that in like their, you know, Amazon.
And
like,
I think an equal amount of hate comes with those BookTok sensations as well. Yeah,
and I think you do get to a point where there are going to be more haters than the average writer would like.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
like,
for sure.
You know, I don't want to be so popular that people start actively hating on my books. I just want to be popular enough that people love them.
Yeah, because you like them,
but it's not. I know what you mean. Where it's just like, oh fuck, I keep hearing about this woman.
I noticed with an in like there was an uptick of sales in Keeping Up Appearances, but then along with that came an uptick in bad reviews, and I was like, oh, sad face.
Damn it.
But it's the nature of it, you know. It is the nature of it, and it's just annoying when people are like, I hated this. Like, yeah, but why? Tell me why, and then I can fix it for the next one.
Yeah, because I've got 12 books coming out this year. I can fix them in one of them. Yeah,
might have that in there.
For the love of God.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people say don't read your reviews, and I think that's true, but I don't think I'd be able to avoid it daily. Like, not even daily, it's like hourly.
Like, even my own social media.
Yeah, I love reading comments on my social media.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not like I'm putting art out there to be judged. It's just pictures of me. And if there's nasty comments on that, then, well, that's a bit, that's a bit rough. But, yeah, I don't think I could steer away from reading the comments on my work. I love it. I like feedback.
Yeah, I do too.
As long as it's constructive, though, you're right.
Yeah,
if it's not constructive, I feel insulted.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of people will say, well, the reviews aren't for writers, they're for other readers. And I can understand that, because a lot of it's not constructive. Like, there was one person who I was like, oh, she's so nice. She hasn't, like, actually left a rating. She's just left a comment about how much she didn't like it, but she wrote it really nicely. Except then she did it for another book as well. And I was like, oh, maybe you're not so nice after all.
Maybe you're just a salty reader.
Yeah.
Fuck's sakes.
You know, that's the nature of...
So she read one book and then read another one. Well, clearly it wasn't that terrible, because she read another one.
Well, and that's like, there used to be a person on Goodreads who would always, on day of release, put it as a 1 or 2 star.
Oh.
And I think I eventually worked out that she was like saving it, because a lot of people do that to save books to read later.
Oh.
So she wasn't actually rating it.
She didn't just have a stalker hater.
No, and I was like, what? Like, it was like, you know, like 20 books in, and I was going, why are you still reading them if you fucking hate me?
Yeah.
Then, like, you know, she'd leave really nice comments on Facebook and stuff. So I was like, oh, maybe she's actually not hating
like
on
saving
them.
The book
yeah,
for
she's
later.
Just saving
right.
them for later. And so I was like, but you realize you're bringing my rating down.
Yeah, like, could you go back then once you've finished it and adjust that star review to make it more accurate?
Yeah. But, you know, for the meantime, you're the second person who's left a review. So now I'm on, like, 3, because one person's given it 5 and you've given it 1.
You're getting 1, yeah.
So thanks for that, but...
I like that you've got these stories about these random people.
It's messy business.
Well, this is a messy podcast.
Yeah, it works. I fit right in.
You do, absolutely. Now, you spoke about it a little bit before, but and we know, obviously, as well. But for the listeners, what do you write? Like, what genre are you writing in?
So it's predominantly these days romance, mostly to contemporary, and that is purely a laziness factor. I can write them faster if I don't have to do as much research or as much
world-building. The world building like so a fantasy would require.
I have so many fantasy ideas stored up that I'm like, I'll get to it one day. Newsflash listeners, I might not get to it one day.
So if you're holding out hope.
Yeah. I mean, I am leaning more into the fantasy stuff now, especially like I'm sticking a lot to stuff I already know. So the one that I've got out already, the Damned trilogy is very, it plays along on a lot of like heaven and hell mythos. So I've kind of mushed together Christian and Greek, and there's even like a bit of Egyptian and stuff comes in.
Is the Damned trilogy where Sins of Saint Benedict?
No.
Part of? No, that's different.
That's the Sins of Saint Benedict is God's an angel. So I titled that really badly because everyone is going to go into that thinking it's paranormal. But it's just because they go to a Catholic school, he's called the god of the school and his like lieutenants are called angels. So at the time it made sense, but then people started adding it to like paranormal lists and I was like, oh shit.
Ah. Read the book.
I was like, oh, okay. So it fits for what it is and it sounds good and people might look at it and be like, oh, it's not what I thought it was, but actually it's quite good. They're very much, so that one is coming out under, well, it's rebranded as Scarlet at the time it came out, just as Elizabeth Stevens, but then with the new pen names coming in, I've rebranded it under Scarlet, especially for more of the paranormal stuff coming out. But it's just, they're real short little, like it's a trilogy of novellas, real like dark comedy. there's like these little creatures called devil bums that run around and create. They're like cherubims, but they're for hell.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got like the old wise one who's kind of a bit like Niles from The Nanny, who's just like really fed up with life and just like, these guys, I'm surrounded by idiots. And then you've got like just the cranky guy who wants to murder everybody. And then there's a little like kind of 5-year old one that runs around and dresses up in his bell dress and has tea parties. And
oh my God, adorable.
It was a lot of fun to write. And there's a lot of like spin-off series that I've got planned for it. So there's one about like the half-human daughter of Cupid, and then the son from the main couple is going to have his story because he's kind of going to be the Antichrist. So he threatens to kind of, you know, do a whole let's destroy the world thing. And then like God makes an appearance now and then.
God, so when you're talking about having all these stories in your head, you really you've got them.
Yeah. Like I've
these planned ideas are just.
Yeah. Like
there's a whole Dewey Decimal System up there, Harry.
Clearly,
I think at last count there was like at least 200 and something works in progress I've got stored on my computer. Gosh.
Holy shit! I have got 7.
I reckon I've got like 4.
I had 7 at one point. Like that was my life.
Yeah, you started at 7.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So there's just so much.
And also for the listeners, do you want to clear up roughly what your word count is for these books? So it's not you're not writing 20,000-30,000 word little novellas,
no,
are you?
So most of them sit in the 80 to 100
there you go.
Zone. Yeah. So that's
just to contextualize my like my level of amazement at what you do is just to be like, because I don't want them being like, oh, they're probably little short stories. I'm like, no. You're writing full fucking novels.
And when so my novellas are still about 40 to 50,000. When I say novella, they're on the longer side of novellas.
Of a novella,
But, yeah, I mean, sometimes they end up shorter than I had expected them to. But, yeah, there's basically nothing below 50, 60
Holy shit.
And then, like, lately they keep blowing up to, like, 120. I'm like, no, you were supposed to be 80. What? Like,
God damn it, yeah.
My timeline.
Why have I added all this in?
It's not good, but it is what it is, and hopefully it makes a better story. But
so you spoke before about your process and how now, what, it's been 6 weeks this year for between book releases, every 6 weeks, and then every 4 weeks next year. What did it look like in the past?
So the first thing I released, I had 3 books stored up before I released that and like sort of made the plunge into self-publishing in the first place.
Yep.
And so that was a much less stressful time in my life because I already had the books written and then
shocker.
Right.
I think it's important to add that Issy's also a mother.
Child has come along in that time. He's not very conducive to getting work done, but that's fine because I expected that. So like I went into this being like, yes, he'll just sit in the corner.
Or he'll be editing. He'll edit on the side.
It was a much quieter time, but no, I think I'll probably actually, I reckon up to Accidentally Perfect, I think I had the books written reasonably in advance.
Okay.
Before I decided to set them out for publishing and all that stuff. And then Grey's Blade was written Love, Lust and Friendship was written after that for a purpose, so that was quite a quick thing. And then after that, I got a lot lax in my times. And so, you know, I'm pulling 20,000 word days to get things finished by deadline.
20,000 word days?
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. Although my brain breaks at about 10-15 at the moment. So
oh, okay. And then that last 5,000 is just indecipherable.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it sort of feels like I've had maybe a few too many glasses of wine and it's like 6 o'clock in the morning and I need to get this finished by 9. And
this is the difference here, is I actually just have a few too many glasses of wine, which then stops me from writing.
Yes. Yeah, I found the sweet spot of, I think it's 3 glasses.
And then you're cracking along.
Yeah.
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 Having a good time.
Then the editor leaves my brain.
My big supporters
of
wine is necessary for writing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's nice.
You've got to find your sweet spot.
This isn't just advice that I think listeners should listen to, but also advice everybody should listen to.
Yes, I think so. I think there's something to be said for finding that thing, whether it be wine or whatever, that helps you to kind of kick out that internal editor. And
I mean, it's great because, like, you didn't pre-plan to say that, but it works so well on this podcast.
Yes.
For you to be like, yeah, drink a couple wine. Of glasses of wine, and then I'm absolutely crushing it in the writing game.
Pretty much. No, it's, It's like, oh, I can say that here because
yeah,
can.
Because there's no judgment. Yeah.
it works here, as opposed to like if I go into a school and I'm like, yes, so I can't really say that here. Yes, I have 3 glasses of wine and stay up until 6 a.m. to write.
Yeah, they're
yes,
like, what's your secret? Children. You're like, booze, children, booze.
Is that when you typically write at 6 a.m.? Like not waking up at 6 a.m. as in you've stayed up till 6 a.m.?
No, so I used to. So my peak writing time would often be about 11 till 4, so 11 p.m. till 4 a.m. before child.
Wow.
Now I have child, it's a lot more difficult to
yeah. kind of children.
It's like, okay, well, I could, you know, let my husband do all the work for a good couple of weeks or, you know, actually pitch in and do some mothering, which seems like the more, you know, sensible and kind option. So that's sort of gone out the window a bit, but there are like Monday night I had zero sleep because I had to get a deadline met and then child woke up at 5 a.m. And so then I was like, oh, I've just lost 3 hours of work and not got any sleep. Woohoo! Oh, so that was like the epitome of my work life. I will usually, you know, pretty much for every book I have to pull an all-nighter to get it finished on time.
Is that a necessity or has that got something to do with those 4 weeks of waffling?
Yeah, it's 100% the 4 weeks of dicking about. Yeah, literally. It's four weeks
of dicking about and not in the sexual manner.
Like it's not even gratifying dicking about. Because I'm very aware I'm supposed to be working on one thing. And I'm like, if I actually worked now, I'd only have to write like 2,000 words a day.
I love those thought processes.
Yeah.
When you're like, I could fix this right now. Will I? No.
No. Not at all. Not at all. I will not change my process because it.
Yeah, because it's just how I work.
And it works. Like, you know, I haven't had a complete flop yet, so.
Nice.
I have no
motivation. That's always a bonus.
It is. It is. And I do find maybe it's actually a secret weapon in some respects because usually if I'm plotting out a novel, then the second half is kind of a bit. I feel it could be a little bit too long. Like, I'm like, oh, do I really need this scene? And if I've literally got, like, 10 hours to write 15,000 words, then I'm like, well, we'll cut this chapter and we'll cut this chapter and this scene goes and that scene goes, I'll merge these two, job done. And I think, oh, actually that made it a bit tighter. I think maybe that was beneficial.
You start to kill your darlings, but you just do it naturally.
Okay. So instead of having, and I don't have time to have this massive thought process because I'm like, shit, I've like literally got no time whatsoever. So
this is a really weird relation for me to Paul, but I did the same thing with clothing recently. I bought a brand new wardrobe.
All right, Marie Kondo.
No, I bought a brand new wardrobe and I had to fit all of my clothing into just that wardrobe.
Oh, no.
And I went through my clothing before and culled stuff. But then when I got to like down to the wire, it was just in the, I was like, that's in the bin because it doesn't fit. Yeah. So it's kind of like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. It's like if you don't leave your time to overthink it, you can't overthink it.
Yeah.
Like,
not in the bin. I'd like to clarify, I donate my clothes.
Not literal bin. No, not donation
literal
bin.
Donation bin. Now, I do have a question for you.
Yes.
A lot of what you're writing currently, and correct me if I'm wrong, is bully romance.
Correct, and yes.
Yeah. Is there, why bully romance? I'd love to know.
Really good question. I ask myself that a lot. Because obviously there's a lot of criticism from non-bully readers, which is a significant portion of the population, understandably.
It really is, but it's huge now.
It is huge, and it's just growing and growing and growing. And I think the thing I like about it, or at least the thing I get from it, is that in my mind, it's a very, it has a lot of parallels for like the destruction of the patriarchy kind of concept, because you've taken this real kind of paragon of alpha maleness.
alpha maleness.
Got all excited for a minute. but yeah, so that, and literally what you have to do through them falling in love with the heroine is to basically bring them to their knees, which is like just, you know, destroying the patriarchy in a lot of ways.
Okay,
because you have to make them, while in every other facet of their life, they still retain basically all the power of every room they walk into. And they literally could crush anybody with basically a thought or an order. They will turn the whole world upside down and they have to submit to the heroine's will. They have to, like, they can't treat her like shit or she's going to walk.
Mm. Yeah.
At least in the good ones.
I was going to say, because there are some.
There are a lot where that's not how it works. And I, you know, if that's what gets some people excited, fine. But that's not what it is for me.
You said a lot of people hate on bully romance. But I would argue a lot of what's popular at the moment is, like, underscored by bully romance tropes. Because, right, like, if you look at ACOTAR.
Yes.
Reese is a bully.
It's
very similar thing.
Both, so is Tamlin.
They're both, they're both bullies. And I think, and I wonder if there's that kind of parallel rise in popularity between, like, people look at that and they don't think of it as bully romance. But as soon as you attach the term bully romance to it, it becomes a different beast entirely. But it
like
is.
Bully's got a negative connotation to it. Yeah.
And I think it is a lot of what that dark romance and romanticy stuff is, I think, supposed to do, and I think is what I get out of it, is that it is about making, like, it's giving us power, like, as women or as whoever the protagonist happens to be. Obviously, I come from a heterosexual kind of background, and that's what I write, that's what I read. So for me, it's very heroine, hero kind of centric, but I think it is a lot of, giving the heroine power within this imbalance of power, society and dynamic, and it kind of, will, a lot of people look at that and be like, yeah, but, you know, you're still kind of, that threat of violence is always there. But, well, yeah, but that's what we live with on a daily basis. You know,
exactly.
Like, we were talking earlier about the whole dark alley concept, you know, that low-level anxiety of dark alleys and deserted streets that a lot of women and girls live with, and I'm sure other people too, but as a woman and girl, that's
your point of
that's
reference.
That's my point of reference. Yeah. And I think, like I was saying to you before, that the concept of, I think a lot of these spaces are taking the dark alley, and it's kind of finding your safe space and your power within the dark alley, because we can't change that. Like, you know, each individual person cannot change that the dark alley exists. And so it's about finding.
It's really nice. It's from a reader's perspective, because I grew up reading bully romance on Wattpad.
Yeah,
I really love bully romance on Wattpad, like bad boy romance.
Yes.
But I think bad boy is kind of bully now, right?
Yeah, it's very much merged.
And as a reader, it's nice to be able to step into a space that is still just as violent, right? Yeah. But like it's, as you said, safe. Like it's like as a woman, I'm okay in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when I step out through it, right?
Yeah, if I step out of it and I'm still in that, you know, I'm still in that bully space, and there's nothing nice happening in the real world, really, right?
Exactly.
But in the book, it's good.
Yeah, and it gives you that, what, you know, the crux of romance is that you know how it's going to end. You know there's hope. You know it's going to have a happy ending, no matter how many roller coasters they take you on. And I think that it does. It gives you that space to work out those kind of societal traumas.
Yeah.
And you know that there's hope. You know it's going to work out, and they'll find, even if they don't find the ending you would like to find in the world, they find the ending that they want and that works for them.
Okay, yeah, okay. I see, I like that.
Yeah.
That gives them a little bit more hopeful, because to play the devil's advocate, I view it as like people that are in bad relationships at the moment trying to justify those bad relationships,
and
they love reading it.
And but I'm not saying that there isn't a very, very big element of that for a lot of
very
readers.
True, because you did mention that there's different, like, there are some bully romances that don't pull towards that aspirational hope.
There's
like
very
you
much
do
just
with yours.
A, oh, well, you know, he beats me, but he loves me, so that's fine.
Yeah, kind of thing. But however,
oh,
you're saying
God.
He has to submit to her will.
Yeah. And then by the end of it, oh, he beats me just a little bit less, so it's fine. And I'm like, no.
No, 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 no.
That's not what you're supposed to do in this case. No, I mean, and look, if the people want to read that, then that's.
Yeah.
Set prerogative, and if they enjoy it, then good. I'm glad they found something they enjoy.
But with yours, you take that alpha male and you pull him down.
And I pit him against as strong a heroine I can put in that situation as well, because the point of it is maybe she has no power, but it's not for lack of wanting it or for trying. It's just, you know, her situation is one that, like, you know, what, in Rain, she's a scholarship student and daughter of faculty, so everyone's like, blah, you're a loser.
I've read Rain. Everyone thinks she's a loser.
Yeah, everyone thinks she's this massive loser, and it's just like, you know, she's so low on the pecking order. She doesn't really even like qualify for bullying, like except by, you know, like the.
Sorry,
the,
I shouldn't laugh at that.
No,
the idea of not qualifying for bullying because you're too like that.
Sorry, you're too loserish. But you know, it's more her situation that makes her powerless. It's not for lack of, like, once he starts paying attention to her, she'll hit back. She's like, no.
Oh, okay,
No, you can't talk to me like that. He's like, I can, I will. And she's like, well, you will, but I'm not going to like it.
Yeah, you can do it as much as you like,
but
watch what fucking happens.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, like, I will hit you. Yeah,
like, duck.
Duck.
And I think too, like, I mean, in For Gods and Angels, it's very much the fact that he gives her the space to find her voice.
Yeah.
He's still very possessive and domineering, but he, because he will spar with her And she
he's hot, by the way.
I think Valen's from one of the hottest guys I've written.
Oh my god.
He's
very my type.
So Vaughn is kind of like him, but he articulates his feelings.
Because he's so stern faced.
Who articulates his feelings? Yeah. Do they even exist? Yeah.
Well, apparently.
Well, in books they do.
What's his name?
Valen.
Valen, yeah. He's quite literate, though.
Yes, he is. He will say it if it needs to be said.
Yeah.
But as a general rule, he will try not. Well, I mean, for most of what he won't say it to Harlow because he thinks they can't be together.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to put
it
out there.
He doesn't see the point because he thinks it's pointless. Yeah.
And also because he thinks that she really actually should, like, she should be with Apollo. And he's like.
And his declaration's really sweet, though.
Which one?
Like Valen's in the end of the first one.
The one where he says that if you. I will love you until my dying breath, but until then I have to hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of my favourite ones.
Oh, my God.
I know you've written them, but it is still amazing to me that you've put out 66 books and you're like, oh, that one where he says this exact line.
I know, right?
Do you know what, though? That's like one of the only, like literally the only things that I could actually think of. Like, it's the only one I remember. Because I have read it, like I wrote it really early.
Yeah.
And so I read it a lot. So
it's got an impression on you because
it was one of the first part like bits I wrote for that whole book was him saying those words.
So you don't write linearly either.
Oh God,
no.
So
yes, team not linear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and quite often too, like I'll have my little chapter plan of what I'm doing, and quite often if I'm chasing it, well, when I'm chasing a deadline, not if when, I will get sort of halfway through the book and then start writing backwards.
What?
Because so I mean we all know how romance has the beats you have to hit.
Yeah.
Right. So I have my. In my plan is like, you know, chapter 3 is the inciting incident, and then, you know, literally in the middle is where you have your midpoint. It's if people actually broke down my books, they would be like, this is so formulaic. it's literally, you know, about 25% through we have plot point 1. Literally 25% through there'll be plot point 1.
Plot point 1. Oh, shit.
So once I get to the midpoint, because that's the fun bit, let's be honest, that's all the sexy banter and before they actually decide they might like each other and everyone hates each other and it's all
that's
like
my favourite bit.
Wild.
I actually get bored afterward.
Yeah, me too.
The minute they're together, I'm like, throw it away.
Yeah. Oh, no, see, I really...
not in your book specifically.
Yeah. If there's sex in these romance books, I pine towards the sex after the declaration of love.
Yeah.
I like that as a concept,
but... it bores me to tears to write it.
Yeah. I have to contextualize. Gets me going in terms of being a reader.
Yes.
Not gets me, you know.
Yes.
Nothing like that. Yeah. Just to PGify this.
Sorry, PGify what?
Oh, fuck.
We make words up on this podcast.
Remember, I was more meaning the concept of needing to PG the podcast.
Oh, yeah, this is not a PG podcast.
Like, is that necessary? Like, come on, Harry.
I'm like, just got to fucking PGify this. Yeah, just
fucking bring this down to this. No, but then, so once I hit that point and I'm chasing a deadline, I'm like, no, I just need to get the beats in.
Yeah,
once the beats are in, the story's finished. So all the other bits in between can be waffle. So I need to have the resolution. I need to have the bit where they break up. Need to have plot point 2 where she either goes sideways or gets slightly better before it all goes horrendously sideways. So I will write backwards to make sure the beats are in and then everything
else
is
cake. That's so interesting.
I like that because it's almost how I write, because I chase the good bits and I think the beats are the good bits.
Yeah.
So my brain wants to do the good bits first.
Also, actually what I find recently, sex scene's the last thing I write.
Oh.
Because I'm chasing deadlines and chasing work out, I'm like, actually, I need to skip over the sex scene because I might not have time for this. This might have to fade to black. I don't have the...
Because it's not like a necessity inside
Because unless it's a sex scene that, actually furthers the plot, I'm like, actually, I might need to come back to this later. So I'll take a pause on that, write the rest of it. If I can come back and finish it, I will. And if not, it'll fade to black because I'm like, dude, I don't have time.
Sorry, got to get rid of this.
When I'm reading your books now, I'm going to be like, oh, easy, run out of time.
Yeah. Next. Or sometimes I just get bored of sex. Like,
well, you've written 66 books and how many of them have sex in it?
Yeah, I'm like, this book is really like, there's just not too much sex in it, but it feels like I've just been writing sex for like the last 3 days. I'm just gonna do something else now.
Yeah, I'm gonna write maybe about character.
They might have a bit of a conversation
or do something outside of the bedroom
or like
clothes on.
They often, like, if you read bits of it, I'm sure there are like really awkward like if you actually stop to think about the practicalities of sex, they're actually really awkward conversations during my sex scene sometimes, because I'm like, well, they need to have this conversation, and somehow they've accidentally had it while they're having actually quite wild sex here. I'm not sure logistically this is going to work.
This makes any sense, but
yes, and I'm like, oh, hey, they haven't mentioned like thrusting or like anything in the last like two pages. I best just chuck a bit of that in. Just to remind people they are actually having sex.
Just
a
bit of movement. Yeah.
Like, no, they're not just lying dead, like deathly still. I love pause and he says,
hold on, let me just put in a thrusting moment. Good. Yeah, everyone's on page.
Yeah, just remember the guys that are having sex? They haven't just like, you know, she's not just sitting on him.
She's not just sitting on him.
On him and having a conversation while he's just slowly deflating. Sexy.
Well, this leads perfectly into the question that I really want to ask you, which is, what is the sex, like the raunchiest sex scene that you've written in
That's
any of your
really
books?
That's really hard.
Like 66. Have they all got sex in them? All 66 of your books?
No, because one is aimed more at the middle grade young adult area. Yeah. So that one did verge a little bit too romantically at times. Yep. Like it's one of those ones where as she grows up, there'll be more romance in it. But I was kind of thinking, my nieces might read this.
Because
at one point I don't particularly want my nieces
Well, PG-ify it.
Mind you, the eldest one is 14 now, so she's getting to the age where she can start reading some of my books.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of
my books, but I think every single book at least has sex, like at least closes the door on it, if not has it on page.
Okay.
Except for that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
The first couple were quite light on actual on-page explicitness.
Yep.
Partly because learning how to write sex is the weirdest feeling. Like, I'm like, this sounds really cringy. Or like, I'll think, oh, is this getting a bit dark? And then I'm like, no. I think I need to lower my expectations of how good I am on this one.
nothing that you can do, I think, can be too dark sex-wise. It's all been done on the page.
I think so. And I realised too, I actually don't, like, I can't write, like, really dark, like, rough sex.
Okay.
I keep, like, Gods and Angels had it and Rain had it where they talked about, like, having really rough sex. And they were started off like, oh, yeah, let's do it. And then it just kind of fizzled out. So I had to, like, hang a massive lantern on, like, I thought this was going to be real rough. And it was like, oh, yeah, but, like, I just want to make love to you. Or something, like, wanky. I don't know what he said. I can't remember what he said. So I can't remember what he said.
You had to give him an excuse. I had to be like, oh, shit.
I've kind of, like, completely gone in the opposite direction. And I'm like, I just can't do it. I've got these, like, real tough, like, alpha, like, violent men. And it's like, oh, let's have this really vanilla sex.
And they just run away from you when you try to get them to do it.
Yeah. It just doesn't feel right for the way the relationship has. Like, obviously, the way I write relationships is they find that middle ground of, she's not in, like, she'll try it once for him kind of a concept, but it's not what gets her going.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, Harlow quite likes, you know, a bit of choking and whatnot, but, you know, the bit, I think it was in the first one where he slaps her ass and she's like, oh, hang on, I wasn't sure I liked that.
And a
reader pulled me up on it. I'm like, but that was literally the point, was she was like, let's try it rough. He tried it, and then she was like, oh, actually, no.
Not a fan.
And then he was like, that's fine with me.
Yeah,
that was like the point of that scene. But one reader's all like, oh, you know, it was really tame sex. And I'm like, but that was the point.
That proves why it's tame sex right there.
Because
there is nothing wrong with tame sex.
No.
Like,
if good tame sex
is fine.
Yeah. Exactly. But see, porn culture's got us thinking that sex all has to be like porn.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like really intense fucking.
Especially in these bully
stuff.
Romances.
Yeah.
And
I think, I mean, the characters, like the guys lend themselves to the idea of like they're all off having rough sex all the time.
Isn't there a sex scene in one of the Colleen Hoover books where they're cut up by the glass and they're fucking in the bathroom?
I would like to say that I've read that, but I have not read any.
I have not read any Colleen Hoover except Verity, so I have no idea if there is.
I do believe it is in It Ends With Us or It Starts.
I feel
with
it sounds
us.
Very uncomfortable.
And they.
Someone who won't even like.
She gets
sex
cut up
the beach or anything
on like the glass.
Is it like glorified as a? As a romantic scene, though? Or is it like an acknowledgement of
the thing with a lot of her books, so that they are? Like, we were having that conversation ages ago about one of them, and people like, this is a fantastic romance, and we're like, but it's not.
I don't know if it's glorified.
I think it's
supposed to be a really hot, rough sex scene, and I just couldn't get over the image of them bleeding.
Yeah.
And that just.
Sex is traumatic enough.
Yeah. And I was just like, okay. Like, I'm not a big blood person. Like, I'll pass out at the sight of a decent enough quantity of blood.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I'm not
I'm not.
This isn't really getting the motor humming.
Yeah, the motor humming. Yeah, like I don't mind a bit of biting and whatnot for a little bit, like a little bit of pain, but not
something.
Yeah, not like literally like gouge my skin and make me bleed. That would just be like, oh, I'm very uncomfortable right now.
I can't quite like. I always feel bad when I say those things without
a mess. Right,
but the mess.
I'm
sorry.
Falling around, like I don't know, like getting on your shower curtain and your bath mat.
Fucking way.
I've been reading.
I'd be like, we best get a Band-Aid on that, love. You know, like, I wouldn't be like, let's fuck in the bathroom. Yeah. Oh,
I've been reading Draco Malfoy fan fiction.
That's rough sex,
just
isn't
to
it?
Expose myself. No, it's actually quite fine. But without going too much, like, because they're wizards, like, anything messy happens, they just kind of wave a spell and it cleans itself.
Oh, I'd love
it
that.
It would be lovely, but I don't want to expose myself or anything right now. But I don't think that, like, I ever have the need to clean up a quantity of anything after sex. So I like, you know, like the idea of being able to clean as a wizard. Just that'd be great for the dishes.
Yes,
and for my bedroom.
For sex, it's not required.
I don't think that's a big issue for me.
Yeah, it's probably more of an issue for women.
I was, yeah,
which is,
or womb people.
Yeah,
womb carriers.
Yes, because it's you know.
I do just obviously we're talking very biologically essentialist here.
Yes.
I just, interesting. You know, like I read about some things in sex scenes and I'm always like, this is so hyperbolized.
Yeah. Well, and also too, like, I think that makes me think of like that Lily Allen song. Is that Lily Allen?
Oh,
The wet patch concept.
Not fair.
Like, I think as a, I don't know whether it is as a woman thing, but like the wet patch can be a problem.
Oh, yeah. How's it go?
Yeah. Now like you I'm leave lying me lying here in a wet patch. Yeah.
In the middle of my God. I never made that connection.
I'm feeling pretty hard done by. I'd spent ages giving head.
Yes.
That song.
Yeah, that song.
Why did I never like actually listen to the lyrics of that?
When I first heard that song, I was like, oh, that is a thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Huh.
It is an inconvenient thing.
Like, so if you had a wizard wand,
it would make
good.
It easier. Yeah. It really would tidy things up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea how we got to
how we got to talking about
because you asked me about the raunchiest.
Oh yeah, the raunchiest sex scene. That's right.
I'm trying to. There's so many. I mean, just and also like you know you were saying before about I can't believe you know 66 books and you remember that one line. I literally don't remember. Like I'll reread books and be like, oh, which genius wrote this?
I love doing that.
It was
that.
Me.
I love reading back my own work and going,
I often don't remember. Like, I don't remember. I'm like, I don't remember this bit.
66, though, is like, come on, I'd be doing the same.
Also, I write them too fast. It's like when you binge a TV series.
Mm,
like, if you go to, like,
I can't remember
later,
their names,
like,
I could have told you in the 2 days I binged it.
Oh, that's like me with books, actually.
Yeah. But then if you do a week-by-week series, you remember much more because you sit with the stuff for longer.
For longer,
raunchiest sex scene. So... one on the pool table, which you would have read in Gods and Angels.
Is that?
That was their first time.
With the
what?
Harry's making hand gestures for listeners.
Yes.
Starts with the hands.
Starts with the hands. It's always good if they start with the hands.
Well, I mean, I think the pool table's a sexy concept.
It
quite
is.
Frankly.
And to be honest, it was a bit of a reaction to, I haven't read the books, but one of the 50 Shades movies. My sister-in-law and I were watching them and we had a few too many wines. Not too many wines. You can't really have too many wines.
Completely agree.
Yeah, so we were having some wines and watching it and the pool scene, like the pool table scene happened and I was just sitting there just rewriting it for her. She was like, that's sexier. I'm like, yes, it was.
Well, there's just something so sexy about when a man's good at playing pool.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so therefore, I don't know what that is.
I'm quite good at pool, Abby.
And I really like the teaching. The teaching you how to play pool thing, like there's
there is something.
Oh
in that.
Yeah, leaning
yeah,
over.
Is something. Yeah. In
what
that.
I don't find attractive is when the golf thing, which you see sometimes in those rom coms, you know, when they go up to help them play golf.
Yeah,
it's such an awkward position to be
is,
in.
And
that
also
I don't need help with.
I know how much you, like I've played golf. My dad plays golf. We have had lessons, and it's enjoyable, but I suck. I'm really good in the lessons, but and around.
Then the pressure gets to
me the
when I'm out in the field.
It's really annoying because I'm better than my husband in lessons and then he's far better than me on the... Anyway. And like it's a massive swing. You will end up like whacking them in the head or something. Like it's just not
sexy. This might
be
ageist of me as well, but I associate the sport of golf with with old people, whereas sport, like,
I'm picturing
pool
like,
is
yeah,
like
80, 90 year old people.
Pool yeah, pool is like younger people.
And
yeah,
they're usually a little
like,
bit hip as
bit,
well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, drinks,
leather
and pool.
Jacket.
Leather jacket,
yeah.
Cigarette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Dusty cap, that yeah. kind of stuff.
Bit of stubble.
Yeah. Bit of stubble. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bit so of roughage true. On your thighs.
And like a schooner, you know? Roughage on your thighs. Oh, why. That's where we're putting the stubble.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know why, but that's the thing at the moment for me.
Yeah.
In,
yeah.
in books, it's like, you know, he gets a little bit of stubble and then, you know, you feel it on your thighs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Nice little description.
Yeah. I'm like, ooh. Yeah.
Learned so much about you.
We've learned so much about you. Yeah. This is what we love about this. We're so vulnerable on this podcast that sometimes when we stop recording, we go, what the fuck did we just say?
Yeah.
And it makes it good.
Do people know that? No, I don't.
Now, we are bordering at nearly 50 minutes.
Yes.
And as our first guest, I do want to try something.
That
okay.
sounds ominous.
Yeah, that does. Especially after the conversations we've just
I
been
can't
having.
I can't see Harry
yeah.
right now either.
just we haven't got a pool table, Harry.
Creeping ever forward, yeah. Nor do I have
There's
stubble.
There's no pool table here.
So we want to introduce, and Abby is going to discern whether or not this is successful or not,
okay.
and tell me if this is a really fucking dumb idea.
Right.
But I want to introduce a thing called rapid fire.
Oh
okay?
God, yeah.
Which
okay.
is when we ask a bunch of questions to our
yep.
guests
yep.
every single time they come in, and there'll be a bunch that are very similar, and there'll
yep.
be a bunch that are quite particular to the person that we've got
okay.
in today. And the idea okay. is that you answer them straight off the bat.
Okay.
Okay. But then the last question is a question that I want you to end the episode on. Okay.
Oh God. Okay.
And you'll get it. But you don't get these. Don't get these questions beforehand. So you can
Ooh.
Sit there shaking in your boots.
Yep.
While I swing these questions at you.
Okay.
Okay.
Go for it. Yep. Let's do
but
it.
But we're going to start with our first ever.
Yep.
Rapid fire question round.
Woohoo!
Today with our guest. Is it? Yeah. We need like Mario Kart, like Rainbow
yes.
Road in the background. All right. So. Question number one, straight
yep.
off the bat as well.
Yep.
What is the best book you've read this year?
That would require me reading a book. The only one I can think of is Dear Ava. Bye.
Beautiful. What are you currently reading?
Currently reading my own work.
Lovely. Name a book that didn't live up to its expectations.
ACOTAR.
ACOTAR. Love it. I agree. What are you currently working on?
Currently working on, so Prince of Thorns needs some edits and my PhD book needs some edits.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Which of your own books is your favourite?
God, probably Accidentally Perfect.
Oh, interesting. Netherfield Prep or Accidentally Perfect?
Oh, definitely Accidentally Perfect.
Still Accidentally Perfect?
Yes. Yep.
Absolutely beautiful. What is your favourite book title?
My favourite book title would probably, that's a really good question. Damned If I Do.
Damned If I Do? But what's your favourite book cover?
Still probably Damned If I Do because I played with fire and it was very exciting.
It was fun. Sexiest protagonist.
Sexiest protagonist.
Oh, we've
protagonist. Oh, sexiest protagonist is probably the current one, Maggie for Prince of Thorns.
Oh, exciting now.
Yep.
And if you could tell young Izzy one thing that you've learned during your research or career, what would it be?
Keep going.
Keep
really,
going.
Keep going. Keep practicing. It's a very slow process in terms of, like, you do need to keep learning. Like, even now, 66 books in, I'm still learning. I'm going to be learning for the rest of my life. And it's fun, it's daunting, it's stressful and annoying, but it's all worth it.
It's all worth it?
It's all worth it.
Oh, my God, that's beautiful.
That
well,
beautiful.
At 52 minutes, that's the best way to wrap up this episode. This has been our first ever guest on The Whiny Writers, and it
Hooray.
Most likely will not be the last time that Izzy will be on this podcast
oh,
because
so
there is
easily
just
not
so
the last time.
much shit that I want to talk to you about.
Anytime you want me.
Where can our listeners find you, Izzy?
So my website is elizabethstevens.com.au. It's got most of my links to all the things. You'll find me on – all my books are on Amazon. And – if you want to find me on socials, it's some variation of writer is.
Some variation.
Yeah,
writer
there's
is.
There's like an underscore in Twitter and the rest I think is just writer is one word.
Amazing. And when this episode airs, we will be popping Izzy's new book up onto our socials as well to give it a little bit of a plug.
Absolutely.
Just so that you guys can help find her.
By
well.
Then Izzy will have released like five more books.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll be like another 500,000 words worth of stuff there
yeah,
out
probably.
In the wild. And we'll be very, very behind in updating our promos for it.
Oh,
but
well.
Once again, thank you so much everybody for listening today. It has been incredible to have our first guest on today. We are so, so excited
Thank
to see what Izzy
you.
Has coming up next. No doubt it's going to be very special. This has been Harry Stewart and
Abby Guy
here with Izzy Duffield today on The Whiny Writers. Bye.
Bye.